VSiN Weekend Morning Line with host Tim Murray on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number three of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. Hi, folks. Tim Murray with you live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas with you every Saturday and Sunday morning. So I'll be with you tomorrow. Whole lot of NBA Finals discussion tomorrow. And don't worry, we'll talk more NBA Finals here in this hour. JVT going to join us in less than 15 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on what to expect tomorrow night. How is he looking to attack this particular Game 7 tomorrow night? Has the total moved too far? So we'll ask him that coming up here in less than 15 minutes. Also coming up this hour, he's been doing an amazing job all throughout the college, the NCAA tournament, I should say. Matt Grissom, Joel, join the program coming up bottom of the hour. He does have his column up looking at this Coastal Carolina LSU series. We've had great analysis from both Jensen Lewis and Jimmy Ott so far on the show here today. And if you missed it, I want to circle back to some of the thoughts from the two head coaches heading into LSU and Coastal Carolina tonight. So this is not winner take all. Of course, this is a best two out of three. So LSU more than likely going to their ace, and we'll get some analysis on their ace, Cade Anderson, here in just a moment from Jensen Lewis. But looking at the market right now, we've seen under money come in. Jimmy Ott was on the program last hour. His best bet, he likes the under. I played it as well, 8.5. Right now, DraftKings still has the 8.5. You got to pay the tax, minus $1.30. But the rest of the market still sits at 8 right now. 8 juiced over here at Circa, and LSU at around $1.50. This is what Jimmy had to say, by the way, just to sum it up. He likes LSU today. He likes Coastal Carolina tomorrow. And then on Monday, he said he's going to play the dog, who is more than likely going to be Coastal Carolina. So that is the way he is looking at it. Look, this is an LSU program. We know what they are. This is an elite baseball program. They were the number 6 overall seed coming into the NCAA tournament. Ran into a little bit of a Cinderella story there in the regional, right? Got knocked off by Little Rock as an enormous favorite. Turned around, trailed 5-1, ultimately prevailed to advance on to the Super Regional, knocked off West Virginia, took care of business against Arkansas two different times. Crazy finish there earlier this week against Arkansas to come back in the ninth inning. You feel for Arkansas fans, including Matt Grissom coming up bottom of the hour. But Jay Johnson, on the maturity of this team as they head into this College World Series championship, here are his thoughts on his squad.
It was everything in that game, and it'll be everything this weekend. And, you know, the longer I do this, the older I get, it really simplifies of what you need to do to get here and to succeed here. And I think that was on full display. And how the game transpired and the end of it, it like kind of flooded me with, like, I can't believe we just did that. But at the same time, we've done it several times this year. And I'm just very impressed with our players' ability to focus on the task at hand, focus on execution, completely eliminate the external, and focus on what's relevant. Like, that's a core principle of our program, is focusing on what's relevant. And these guys do a great job of that.
Look, they put the pressure on him. They made him make those mistakes, you know, a ground ball that should have been a double play. They made a mistake. The LSU did, went to third instead of trying to turn the double play. Line drive to the outfield, outfielder slips, hits off his shoulder, and then a mistake by Arkansas not to pitch around one of the best hitters in the country, and he comes through with an RBI single. So that's where LSU is at. Coastal Carolina, on the flip side, is a team that Jimmy Ott continued to reiterate last hour. This isn't a Cinderella. This is a premier college baseball program, and has been for a number of times. Look, they've won a national championship within the last decade. They have not lost a baseball game since the middle of April, and that's why this line of questioning earlier this week at the press conference left some of the Chanticleer players a little bit confused. Take a listen.
Your thoughts on LSU, what do you admire just as student athletes and fans of baseball? What do you like about the Tigers?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really worried about the Tigers. We're more of just a self-oriented team. Like, we're just focused on our team and our team only.
The first answer came from Jacob Morrison, who will be starting tomorrow night for Coastal Carolina. And that is the pitcher that most people anticipate, at least Jimmy Ott, and I've heard some others as well, to have Coastal in a pretty advantageous spot tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon. It's actually a day game there in Omaha. So tonight, the pitching matchup is going to be Cade Anderson, the starter we anticipate for LSU, as he has been fantastic this year. He's the ace of this staff. Didn't pitch all that well in the Super Regional, but he shoved to open up Omaha against Arkansas, going seven innings, allowing just one run. And earlier today, we had on Jensen Lewis, of course, co-host of our VSiN by the Books morning show every weekday morning from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern. And we had a little chat about tonight's starting pitcher for the Bayou Bengals. You know, when you look at this best of three series, and you mentioned Cade Anderson, I'm curious to get your thoughts, Jensen, as a former pitcher. This guy, after his lights-out performance against Arkansas, started to get, hey, this guy could be a first-round pick. Maybe he's in the mid-20s, somewhere in that, somewhere in that range when we get to the draft in a month or so. What impresses you about tonight's starting pitcher for LSU, Cade Anderson?
I think it's his ability to turn a lineup over two, three, potentially four times. And it's the vastness of the arsenal. He has so many different weapons that he can go to, and certainly the poise of him. Obviously, you play at LSU, you're going to pitch in a lot of big Friday night contests. You're going to pitch in a lot of tough scenarios there. So he feels extremely polished. He feels like a guy you can plug and play in pretty much any organization, and you don't feel that it's going to be too long of a time in the minor leagues to find his way up to a big league rotation. So again, for people who have not seen him, a guy that works efficiently, he's going to pound the strike zone, a lot of different ways to get you out in two strike counts. And so Coastal certainly has their work cut out for him, but if there's a lineup that could create some problems, now knowing kind of where the conditions are and how they offensively can be a chameleon of sorts, this will be a challenge for Cade Anderson tonight.
LSU minus $1.50 favorite here at Circa, total down to 8, juiced over here at Circa, juiced over at a number of other spots. And if you still like that under at 8.5, DraftKings still has it juiced at minus $1.30 to the under. Excited to watch this one tonight, and tomorrow we will get plenty more thoughts on game 2. Where do we sit? Does LSU have a 1-0 series lead? Does Coastal Carolina have that 1-0 series lead? It's funny, I threw in that parlay, because it's what we tend to do here on this show and on this network. So I put together the SGA NBA Finals MVP along with LSU to win the national championship. And lo and behold, Jimmy Ott, I would say this, wasn't against it, but I don't say he was massively in favor of it. But Aaron Moore, who has helped us out from a college baseball standpoint, was in favor of it. All right, we're going to talk some hoops with JVT coming up here in about 7 minutes. And where do we sit for game 7? Total continues to come down a little bit, sitting at 214.5 here at Circa. There are some 215s out there in the market, and the spread is down to 7.5. And look, when you think about what we've seen so far this series, 3 up, 3 down, right? 3 wins for both teams, 3 covers for both teams. Now, obviously, the Oklahoma City cover in game 4 was incredibly fortunate, but we have seen the market correction here, and we've talked a lot about the total, but how about the spread? Now, I think there has been a move in that direction, rightfully so, but think about what it was for game 2. Game 2 of this series was 11.5, and now we're sitting at 7.5. So we've seen a 4-point move from game 2 in Oklahoma City to game 7 in Oklahoma City. For comparison's sake, game 5 was 9. And the Thunder did go out, win, and cover that. So we've had 3 games so far in Oklahoma City in this series. Game 1, Thunder minus 10. Pacers came back, overcame a 15-point deficit in the final 9 minutes, won the game. Game 2, market adjusted, because of the expectation that the Thunder would bounce back. That's where we saw a first half spread. I bet it at 7.5. I think it closed 8.5. Thunder went out, won 123-107, won and covered. Game five, market was sitting 9, Thunder 9, with the expectation of the zigzag because the Thunder won game four in Indianapolis. Thunder went out, took care of business. That was the Jalen Williams remarkable performance. And now we've here got a situation. It's a game seven, but it's also Thunder off a loss. Thunder 18-2 straight up this year, coming off of a loss. This postseason, they're undefeated, coming off of a loss. In the first half, they're 5-1 ATS off of a loss, 4-2 ATS full game, and I believe 4-2 ATS first quarter. Now, what's interesting, though, is that you're not getting that tax necessarily on the first half all that much. We're looking at a full game spread right now of 7.5. First half spread, 4.5. So a little bit of a tax, but nothing too crazy. And that's something I'm going to talk to JVT about, because I am staring at Thunder first half here a little bit as a possibility to look at. And we'll also discuss the total. Last five, game sevens, we've seen the NBA Finals, wildly low scoring. Haven't seen one, though, in 9 years. That was Cavaliers and Warriors. Things slowed down to a crawl in the fourth quarter. 93-89 was the final score. Should we think we'll see something similar coming up on Sunday night? We'll ask JVT that next when he joins us. It is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We keep it rolling here on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. How about this? Special guest going to pop in studio. The one and only Paul Charchian going to join us coming up bottom of the hour. And Matt Grissom, very kind to move back a little bit. So Mr. Charchian, the OG of fantasy football, he's going to pop in studio here in just a little bit. I believe sources tell me he has a fantasy draft. It's June 21st. All right. I'll let him explain himself, but I always love talking to Charch, especially in studio. So we'll talk to Charch here in just a moment. So Matt Grissom going to join us coming up in 30 minutes now. So we will do that. Before we catch up with JVT, just a reminder, folks, all our best bets here at VSiN are brought to you by our friends over at GBank, and they're introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card in the first 90 days, deposit, and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. First Bet will match that deposit, $100 deposit match. You'll also receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. So once again, head on over to vsin.com/GBank. That's vsin.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Well, I'll get to my best bets here in just a little bit. Let's see if our guest, JVT, has any ratcheted up for game number seven. As JVT, you know, you and I last year on primetime talked so much about, you know, market corrections and overreactions, a lot in the zigzag or the desperation spot of betting in that first half. So when we look at this total, what do we make of it right now, where it opens 215.5, 7-point adjustment from close of game six, 15-point adjustment from game one, and we're already shockingly seeing money come in and it's actually knocked it down to 214.5. Is this too much of an overreaction to the game seven under theory?
I think you can make the argument it is. I think a lot of these markets and a lot of these odds makers have done a really great job of already accounting for what the game seven flow is going to look like in these opening numbers, Tim. And I think that one of the things that would help you get to the under would be the fact that, look, this is going to be a series, or excuse me, a game in which you could get the potential, if things play out as many expect, or at least as the trends, I would say, point to. It could be a blowout. Game sevens tend to be a little lopsided. OKC has done a much better job at home. They have won by larger margins at home, and that could keep you under a total if they really hold down, tamp down this offense for Indiana. But I'm with you in the sense that I think a lot of this has been accounted for, and the fact that this has continued to get pushed down and probably will get pushed down a little bit more by the time we get to game time on Sunday, that you can make the argument there's going to be a point where you're going to want to vet this thing over.
Yeah, and you know, I was listening to Zach Lowe, someone that you and I respect pretty well, and I want to say he had referenced the expectation is Indiana's just going to do what Indiana does, right? They're going to want to go out and go. So is that kind of your feel too? Look, I know that game six played out 199 points, but that was a pretty big aberration. I thought it was a complete no-show from Oklahoma City. So no turnovers forced. Do you expect the pace still to be kind of up and down with these two teams on tomorrow night?
I mean, I think that the Indiana Pacers would like for that to happen. But we should also note that in four of the six games that we've seen up to this point, Tim, OKC has held Indiana's transition offense down in a really big way, allowing them to score less than a point per play off live rebounds in transition, again, in four of the six games so far. And the two big wins for Indiana, game three and then in game six, those are the two games in which they were really able to get out and run. And obviously the common thread there in game three and game six was they were playing at home. There's not the same, obviously, when you're playing out there on the road, where role players tend to play more poorly. Obviously, you get guys who are not hitting open looks potentially, and you're talking about those guys away from home. So I think that there will be the potential, and I think that there will be obviously Indiana trying. But again, this is a game seven. You will tend to get a little bit tighter. Possessions will matter. You will try to play your game. That's easier said than done. And if it's a 6-point game in the fourth quarter with, you know, 4, 5, 6 minutes left, you're going to want every possession to count. You're going to try to run your stuff. And I think that's going to maybe play in the favor of Oklahoma City in that Indiana is going to be slowed down here a bit. So I think that that's the case. But I also think that Oklahoma City, for a majority of the series, again, in four of the six games, they have done a great job in transition defense.
At me, JVT, is where you could follow Jonathan Von Tobel on social media. And, of course, catch him weekdays with Stormy Bonatoni on Money Moves. And, JVT, when you look at the spread here, game one, 10, Pacers come back and win. Game two, 11.5, Thunder win and cover. Game five in OKC, 9, Thunder win and cover. And now we're down to 7.5. We've seen a little bit of movement here towards the Pacers. What's your feel on where we're at here? Because a similar thing happened in the Nuggets series. I think you and I joked about it prior to that game, where there was someone in the media who said the line was, quote, disrespectful. And I'm like, I don't think so. And they went out and won 125-93. Now, it is fair to note that Aaron Jordan Gordon was banged up, and you look at the depth of this Pacers team. So what do you feel about this spread heading into tomorrow night, that it has moved from a peak of 11.5 at one point in a game in OKC in this series to 7.5?
I think that it makes some sense that you're going to get some buyback here, obviously with a lower total too. I think some bettors are just going to gravitate toward taking, right, 8.5 points, things like that, because of the big adjustment on the total. So I think that's part of why this has been driven down. I think that there's a strong argument to be made that Oklahoma City deserves to be downgraded throughout the course of this series, just because of how inconsistent and how poorly they have played. But this is what goes back to, I think, what has been the frustrating aspect of the series. I don't know if you've thought this, Tim. I said this to Stormy yesterday. This series has been frustratingly obvious at times, if that makes sense, right? Where they lose, they blow game one. Of course, they're going to bounce back in game two. Of course, Indiana is going to go back and cover a game in game three. Of course, the zigzag's going to happen in game four. Of course, the Thunder are going to win and cover in game five back at home. Of course, the Pacers are going to win and cover, win outright as an underdog in a desperation game six, right? Like, so from a side perspective, I'm not going to bet anything outside of in-game, but I will say it is hard for me not to lean toward Oklahoma City, given the adjustment we've seen here, and just given the way this postseason and this series has played out. OKC has been very great off of losses. They have lost two consecutive games just twice in this entire season. When you go back to November and then in April, that they have done well in these situations. And just if you're a situational bettor, you have cleaned the board essentially in this NBA postseason. And I find it hard to not at least kind of look at that and go, man, why don't we just bet OKC? Because it has been so painfully obvious. Every situation has played out exactly as you expect.
Yeah. And you look at, you know, I was kind of late to the party looking at the first halves for the Thunder off of losses. They did not cover the first half in game four, got that magical cover in game four for the full game. But, you know, what's funny is you look at game two in that clear bounce back spot. I think I laid 7.5. It closed 8.5 in the first half. And now it's on market, right? It's maybe a little juiced up, but 4.5 is not too far off from a 7.5-point spread from a first-half standpoint. But, JVT, while I have you here for 2 minutes, I'm curious your thoughts on the MVP. If the Pacers win this thing on Sunday night, is it too simplistic to say whoever plays better, Halliburton and Siakam, will get the MVP? Or do you think Siakam has a sizable advantage over Halliburton?
I think he's got a sizable advantage. Like, if I had a vote right now, I'm very much like penciling in Pascal Siakam to be my vote for Finals MVP if they win this, barring a 35-point explosion with a potential game winner, right, for Tyrese Halliburton. I think Siakam has been wildly more effective. Even in the game one, Tim, where Tyrese Halliburton had the game-winning shot, Siakam was the more consistent player in that situation. Outside of game two, where he only had 15 points, he has done everything he has needed to do. From a scoring standpoint, he has been more consistent than Tyrese Halliburton, who has had these peaks and valleys throughout this series and has had more valleys than peaks throughout this entire series. I think that there's no question right now. He is in the lead by, I don't know how what using a measurement is in horse racing, furlongs, whatever it is. Like, he's got a lead
on
Tyrese Halliburton. Yeah, there we go. And I think that it would be somewhat shocking if both of them were to come out there and perform relatively close to one another, barring a ridiculous game winner or anything like that, right? Some massive event that Pascal Siakam would not win Finals MVP here. I think it is more correlated to Siakam and the Pacers winning than it is Tyrese Halliburton.
Final 45 seconds. Should there be an 80-cent difference between Thunder Moneyline and SGA to win NBA Finals MVP?
No, I talked about this immediately after the game the other day with Will Hill on his podcast. That was when it was like $1.85. And I was like, that should be over $2. That should be closer to like Moneyline with the Oklahoma City Thunder. That is almost 1-to-1, right? Like, you should eliminate everybody off the board, and it should just be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the identical Moneyline price to what the Oklahoma City Thunder are. They are not winning that game, and they're not winning that series unless Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is MVP, especially after what Jalen Williams did in game six, right? He was awful. They got outscored by 40 points in his time on the floor. Shai wasn't great either, but that should be a 1-to-1 price, and there is value until it matches.
Totally agree. Yeah. I mean, look, Jalen Williams had 40. Also, SGA scored 30 in that game. So it wasn't like he was some bum in game five in that victory. JVT, I know you're headed on vacation, man. Enjoy it, brother.
Thanks. Appreciate it, man.
There he is, Jonathan Von Tobel, giving us the insight on game seven of the NBA Finals. A special visitor in studio, the one and only Paul Charchian will join us. Let's talk some football with Charch. We'll do that next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
You know, one of the many, many things that is great about working at the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, among just having this backdrop and having the stadium swim as an attraction, you never know who's going to stop by. And I know he was put to work yesterday by Mitch and Paul, but he's my friend first, Mitch and Paul.
It's true.
The one and only Paul Charchi enjoyed it. We go back further than Mitch and Paul.
Yeah,
Charch.
Like 10, 12 years. Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Steve Saban show. I was just, I was the update anchor there. And
now look
at me.
They don't have update anchors anymore.
I know. Yeah, right? Thank God I have some sort of personality, because I would have been screwed.
Who told you that?
That's true. That's a good point.
That's an assumption that we're not here to validate whatsoever.
That's a good point. Yeah. The one and only Paul Charchian is here. You are taking part in a fantasy football draft up at
For
Stadium
charity.
Swim. Very
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. The Scott Fish Bowl. The Scott Fish Bowl is a nationwide fantasy league that raises money for Fantasy Cares, which does a variety of good things for children across the country, including a specific charity here that I don't remember the name of, but it's a child-oriented charity. And so what happens is experts in the community join regular people to play in fantasy leagues that in every major market. And we do a live draft here at Stadium Swim. I have recently moved to Southern Utah.
That's
so
right.
I'm in easy striking
there
range, 2 hours. And we're here at Circa for a big fantasy draft, literally walking down to the pool. We're drafting poolside.
That's
I'm in
nice.
I'm in flip flops right now. And I texted you and I'm like, Is it okay if I come down in pool wear and we just talk?
Oh, yeah. We just talk. Absolutely. I'm the only one who has to wear a jacket. Now, you just have to wear a shirt and you're good.
You don't have to wear pants.
That's true. People don't know. I'm like Donald Duck over here. No one needs to know what's down on underneath the desk. All right. You've intrigued me on some possible long shot angles. And look, it's June 21st. Long shots are a nice way to go. Yeah. Right after the draft, I threw in a couple offensive rookie of the year long shots, but I want to start offensive player of the year. I don't have any bets in this market, and maybe you can convince me of one. So you were looking down the odds board, and you were intrigued at a 50-1 shot at offensive player of the year. Who jumps out to you?
And I think you can find value in that price range where you can find really good players that you can make a case for explosive seasons that can realistically hit a 40, 50, or 75-1 kind of shot. In this case, first guy, Bucky Irving, the running back for Tampa Bay. Bucky Irving's rookie season, nothing short of astounding. Yeah. I believe just as a pure runner, and he can catch, by the way, he's not Christian McCaffrey, but he can catch. As a pure runner, Bucky Irving is the best runner in the NFL across the board. He gives you everything. He gives you power. He gives you elusiveness. He ranked number one in broken tackle rate among players with at least his number of carries. And what we saw over the course of the season, he started out as a little bit of a role player. And then over time, Liam Cohen's like, I found our guy. And he went by the end of the season, he was the power back for one of the best offenses in the league. So when you look at to win offensive player of the year, we need a running back who's going to get us 2,000 total yards. Bucky Irving has every bit the possibility to run for 1,600, catch for 400, and get you into that 2,000 range. And that 50-1 feels great for somebody who is as good as Bucky Irving is. And I think we're going to look back and go, that was a real value at some point.
As people, you're doing a fantasy football draft now, the gears are starting to go. How high is Bucky Irving going to go?
So right now, Bucky Irving's average draft position is the end of the second round.
Okay.
I'm so high on him. I'm taking a whole round earlier than that. Wow. End of the first round.
Where do you have him? Have you done your rankings for running backs? Where do you have him?
Four.
Wow.
The guy's just fantastic. And I love Bucks. I'm buying Bucks.
Yep.
I just think that offense is going to be even better than it was last year. And I think, roughly the fifth best offense last year anyway. Added depth in the draft and just feel like this is a very, very complete offense. Their defense, by the way, Bucks are really good. Really, really nice odds across the board on everything Bucks, including Super Bowl odds, win the division odds. I like Bucks everywhere. That defense for the Buccaneers, Tim, last year, ravaged by injury in the secondary. Let's assume most of those players come back and play most of this year healthy. That's going to be a really tough team to beat in a really weak division. So I can see the Bucs getting into the 13, 14 win range, getting home field for much or all the playoffs. Yeah. And now we're talking about a team that's going to be a problem later on.
Looking at the odds right now, I just pulled up DraftKings. Tampa Bay, 13-1 to win the NFC, even money to win the NFC South.
Yeah, and that feels about right.
Yeah.
Even money feels about right. Your long shot there would be Carolina. But 13-1 to win the NFC. And I don't know how you feel about this. I never make Super Bowl futures now. I make all conference bets now because if it's 13-1 for them, for the Bucks to win the conference,
right,
the Super Bowl odds are going to be roughly double that, maybe a little bit better.
28-1,
yep. Right? So instead of being 26-1, because they're 13-1,
a little bit
right?
better. Yeah.
It's a little bit better. I would rather have the conference. Then in late January, I'll decide if I'm going to roll the whole thing over and effectively get the same odds that I would have gotten in June, or if I just want to cash out.
Yeah.
Maybe the Bucks are running into a juggernaut at that point. So just philosophically, I always bet the conference championship games, never the Super Bowl. So I've got that flexibility in January.
I've heard that. I was talking to a handicapper who did the same exact thing in the NBA. Didn't play NBA Finals futures, just played conference futures. And then you figure out what you want to do if you're able to catch that.
Yep.
Paul Charchian hanging with us here in studio before he heads up to Stadium Swim and does a little fantasy draft. Well, you're all in on the Bucks. So what are we doing with Baker Mayfield?
75-1 to win MVP.
Ooh, okay.
Baker Mayfield could be sitting on a 5,000 passing yard season. He was so much better last year. Liam Cohen's offense looks really, really good. And now with the depth of receiver, They put first round pick into Emeka Ebuka, and now I love him too. He's NFL ready day one.
Is he going to be? I always talk to you about this. Rookies, especially wide receivers, running backs, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes get overdrafted. What's your expectation with an Ebuka? Do you think he's going to get overdrafted, or is he a guy that could slip a little bit because he's not Hunter? Right. He's not, you know, a guy like that. So is there a possibility that Emeka Ebuka maybe slips a little bit?
The problem for Ebuka is this. He's primarily a slot receiver. He ran 81% of his routes in college from the slot. Chris Godwin is coming back off that injury.
Yeah.
And we don't know Godwin's status right now. If they felt confident enough in Godwin to sign him to a new deal in March, the Bucs did. So apparently they think he's going to be ready sooner than later. But if Godwin isn't, and Ebuka, who just got tons of reps at Ohio State, again, very NFL ready, he could walk in day one and be the starting slot receiver in this offense, and maybe he never looks back.
I thought that was a really smart decision to draft him. He is, like you said, he was a guy that I went to Notre Dame, Ohio State, fall of 23, and Marvin Harrison Jr. was obviously there.
Right.
Benjamin Morrison took him out of the game. Emeka Ebuka was wreaking havoc everywhere. Yeah. I mean, he is that talented of a player. All right, before we let you run, talented player equals Travis Hunter. So I have two long shot offensive rookie of the year bets. RJ Harvey at 50-1, Caleb Johnson at 50-1. Just, I liked both of them in college, going to spots where I think Caleb Johnson will be the day one starter in Pittsburgh. RJ Harvey, who the heck knows what?
That J.K. Dobbins signing daggered him, I think.
He's 20-1. I definitely wouldn't bet it at 20-1. But what are you doing with Travis Hunter?
By the way, Caleb Johnson, the entire offense for Iowa last year.
He was everything.
They could not pass. And every defense knew it was going to be all Caleb Johnson. Ooh. And it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Caleb Johnson was still awesome. And, you know, power back, great running between the guards. I am a big fan of his. Some people have analyzed his metrics and they don't love him. But I just think that defense has played to stop him in every game last year. So I'm with you on that. But Travis Hunter's fascinating. 10-1 to win offensive player of the year. 12-1 to win
rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year. Yeah. Thank you. 12-1 to win defensive rookie of the year. But what are we even doing here if you don't play him at 100-1 to win both? Because you're never going to get this chance again, Tim. Let's just go have fun, because this could be the story of a lifetime. I think if he's in sniffing range of both voters, and it's an AP vote, right? Mm-hmm. Voters are going to be like, I can never do this again. I think there could be a ton of momentum for him to win both. And there's a case for him to win both. I mean, Hunter.
What is Liam Cohen saying right now? Is he saying he's going to play both sides? It's more primarily defense? No, or offense?
They're saying he's going to play most offensive snaps and most defensive snaps, but they focused on offense so far.
Yeah.
But there's still a scenario here where the big plays, his ball skills are so good.
Yep.
What if he's sitting on a 7-interception rookie season? Right? That would be enough, which is very possible because of the ball skills he's got. That would put him in the conversation for defensive player of the year. What if he houses 10 touchdowns as a rookie receiver? I just think, you know, at 100-1, it's just going to be so much fun to have action on that in December.
We got 20 seconds. How high is Ashton Jeanty going in drafts?
Really high. He's going in the first round, and rightfully so. They're going to pound him here in Vegas. Tons of carries coming, special back. You can make a case for him to be the first player taken in fantasy drafts ahead of Saquon Barkley.
Wow.
Usage is going to be sky high.
Fantasy Life, Guillotine Leagues, at Paul Charchian. He joins Mitch and Paul, but he really likes me more. Don't tell them, but he likes me more. Paul Charchian, everyone. We'll talk some college baseball to wrap up the show next.
VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Hey folks, there's a new sports betting market in town, and it's called XCUTA. I'll spell it for you. XCUTTA. XCUTA is a sports Calcutta. Easy for me to say. Combining the adrenaline of live auctions and strategy of sports prognostication. Create your own XCUTA auctions for you and your crew for any sport or sporting event. Football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, Super Bowl, World Series, March Madness, Wimbledon, even your own local golf tournament. Create your own private or public auctions. Create secondary markets for aftermarket buying and selling. Over 1,000 teams, player, and drivers in the database with the ability for you to add more. Free practice auctions now running at 3, 6, and 9 p.m. at xcutta.com. And for a 3-month free bidding subscription, email support at xcutta.com and make sure you mention us, VSIN, xcutta.com, the future of future wagering. You know, it's always nice when you can have friends stop by the studio. And a couple weeks ago, my good friend Matt Grissom stopped by here in studio, sat in that chair that Paul Charchian was in. And he joins us right now, courtesy of our progressive guest line. And how are we doing, man? Do you want me to, can I give you a hug through the video screen here? Are you okay? You used to it? How you doing?
I was about to say, do we even have to talk about it? It's becoming just the norm for Arkansas to blow it. But, you know, when all this started, there were three teams that, in my opinion, were the clear-cut favorites to win it all. It was Tennessee, Arkansas, LSU. Unfortunately for Arkansas, they had to go through both of them. And it didn't fall our way. That is life. But now I get to sweat this LSU ticket. My brother-in-law and sister are big LSU fans. So they're on their way to Omaha, and they'll get to take their 6-year-old and watch the Tigers. It should have been us, should have been my boys, but you know, that is life.
That is life. That's a good way to put it. Matt Grissom joining us here at Grissom on X. I did hear from our mutual friend and fellow Arkansas supporter, Colin Wilson. I heard him on his podcast. Just let it out a little bit. He said, I believe it was the third worst play in Arkansas sports history. So he was none too pleased, or most devastating loss, I guess, to put it. But we move on, Matt, and we hit the national championship. And I know it hasn't been officially announced, but it's got to be Cade Anderson tonight for LSU, Cameron Flukey for Coastal Carolina. Total 8.5 is at DraftKings, 8 market wide. Sounds like the wind could be blowing in from, I believe, right field. How are we looking at this from a total standpoint here first, Matt?
Yeah, I think this is going to be an under-top series. You look at the pitching matchups on both sides. You've got LSU, who they have a bullpen that ranks 13th in the country in ERA. Coastal's is 5th. And then you look at the whole pitching staff in and of itself. It's 2 for Coastal Carolina, 9 for LSU. These are both really good pitching staffs. The offenses have been kind of hit or miss at times. LSU does have the advantage with the 162 weighted runs created compared to Coastal's 127. But the way that Coastal's offense has been playing here lately, on a 26-game win streak, I might add, I just feel like everything is going to be really tight. You saw Coastal go to Auburn to take on the Tigers in that Super Regional, and it was pretty low scoring in that first game. It went into extra innings, and that, in my opinion, was the best pitcher that they faced in Sam Dutton. But they haven't seen anything like Cade Anderson and Anthony Ionson, and I think that's going to be a real task for them. I don't want to say that Coastal got lucky to be in the bracket that they were in, because they did take care of business. But if you look at the body of work, I mean, going through Arkansas, UCLA, Murray State, to me, is tougher than going through Louisville, Arizona, and Oregon State. And, you know, Coastal made it. This is going to be a team that they have not seen before in LSU.
When you look at the series price, -190 for LSU, +155 for Coastal, you could, you know, go exacta markets, you could go sweep, you could go 2-1. What's your feel on how this series plays out? Are you looking, I know you have an LSU future, so you're in a different position, and obviously a very good position where you could just clearly hedge off of it if you wanted to. What's your feel right now, Matt, on how this series ultimately plays out?
Yeah, and I did take, when the bracket came out, I did take Oregon State and Coastal, but LSU would be the better payout. But I think this is kind of interesting, because I do think Cade Anderson wins game one. Game two is where it could get tricky for LSU with Jacob Morrison, because like I said, I don't think Coastal's offense has seen anything like Kate Anderson and Anthony Ionson. I don't know that LSU has really this postseason had to face an arm like Jacob Morrison. You know, they didn't have to face Gagewood, who pitched the no-hitter. You got Zach Root, but you got a pretty bad Zach Root. And then now here's Morrison. I think he's 12-0 or 13-0 on the season. One of the best pitchers in the country. And him and Anthony Ionson, I mean, this game, too, may be a race to two runs. Like, that may win it. If you think back, the Rhett Lauder, Paul Skeens game, Tommy White walked it off in extras to win 2-0. I think that could be very reminiscent of that type of matchup when you see Ionson and Morrison take on each other. So, in my opinion, I would be, if I didn't have any ticket on it, I would say LSU, back them game one, and then maybe take the run line with Coastal. Money line kind of depends on what it is in game two. I think it could go three. If it does go three, I actually think that it starts to benefit Coastal Carolina more because of that deep bullpen, because of the multiple starters they can throw out there. Riley Eichhoff, grad senior who has pitched his butt off through the College World Series, has looked really good. LSU kind of struggled to find a game three starter. They mix and match with Chase Shores. You know, his fastball sitting at 100, 101, so he's obviously a tough out, but there's some control issues there. You've also got Zach Cowan, who stepped up really good the other night against Arkansas. So you're talking about availability, and, you know, I lean Coastal there. But again, LSU does have the better offense, so it gives me pause. I could honestly see this going two ways. It's either LSU wins in a 2-0 sweep, or Coastal pushes it to three and things get really dicey in that game three.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You could read Matt's write-up of the College World Series championship on vsin.com. So to sum it up, you're looking at under today, and then depending on the number, obviously, probably under again tomorrow?
Yeah, I would. I think we've got 19, 20 mile per hour winds blowing in right now. I think it's supposed to do that all the way up until about halfway through the game. So, and plus the park has been playing big. There are several home runs that just barely got out of there. Your 408 to center, I think there were a couple players that hit it 407, 408 on the dot that didn't get out. You know, that's a home run in any other ballpark in America as far as collegiate ranks go. But yeah, I think LSU takes game one. I think Coastal may keep it tight in game two. And then game three, it's all hands on deck. Which that's the benefit both of these teams have going through the winner's bracket. You know, they got to play three games. They take care of business. All their guys are back pretty much on normal rest. So as much as I would have liked to see it for one, an Arkansas fan, but two, for college baseball fans, we really wanted to see more baseball.
Right.
Arkansas losing that game just it really benefited LSU because you're talking Kate Anderson's now starting in an elimination game on Thursday against Arkansas. That's what Paul Skeens did in 2023. If you think back, it was Saturday start, Thursday start against Wake Forest, and then he ended up not pitching in the championship series. So Jay Johnson and LSU got to avoid that. Now they've got Kate Anderson ready for game one. So yeah. Kudos to them. Now they're in a position to go win the whole thing with Anderson and Ionson back-to-back.
Matt, I appreciate it, man. You've done an awesome job handicapping all of the college baseball. I know you enjoyed yourself out in Omaha. Sorry about your Hogs, but a tip of the cap to you for all the great work you've done all throughout the college baseball tournament here.
I appreciate it, Tim. C'est la vie.
There he is, Matt Grissom, at Grissom on X. All right, so my bets, I am in on the under as well, so that would make three of us, as we had Jimmy Ott, Matt Grissom, and now myself. So under 8.5, I laid $1.15. Does look like still $1.30 is out there on the under in that one. And then we'll see if this comes back to bite me, but I agree with JVT. I think the NBA Finals MVP market is mispriced at -205 for SGA. So I got a little creative. Maybe it's going to bite me in the butt, but I'll go LSU to win the College World Series, paired up with SGA to win the NBA Finals MVP, +127. All right, that's going to do it. We'll be back tomorrow, bright and early, 10 a.m. Eastern, here on VSiN. Up next, Tom Byrne and Jeff Schwartz. They've got Ready, Set, Bet. Then 7 hours of live bet Saturday. This has been the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.